Welcome back to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is the September 29th, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. This is your co-host, Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Now, Nick, how you doing?
Doing great, Chase. It's good to have the football team here, still undefeated through the end of September. So that's always exciting. Definitely a intense battle against the Beavers, which we will talk about.
Yes, we absolutely will. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about the big news that finally dropped today that we've been hinting at or kind of discussing around the last couple or few podcasts, which has to do with Vince Uruchukwu. Obviously not great news, although right now it sounds like for him, it's better than it could have been. But before we get to that, let me just say that as always, it's a family podcast for us. So if you hear some strange noises in the background, that's because I'm joined by my little daughter here, who likes to watch videos way too late at night, which is entirely my fault. Okay, so I was actually surprised that this news broke the way it did. I don't know if this was intentional or not, but we had talked about earlier. I had heard, you know, back in earlier in the summer, even before we started talking about this podcast, that Vince had been involved in a very serious cardiac episode. I was, you know, it was described to me as like a Hank Gathers type episode. For those of you old enough to remember that situation, that's particularly important or has a connection with me because I grew up like three blocks down the street from Loyola Marymount as a kid. And I was in junior high and huge, huge fan of Loyola Marymount, much bigger fan of Loyola Marymount basketball at that time than USC basketball, even though I was still a huge USC football fan. And when that happened, it was obviously a huge part of my childhood. I was at the game when Hank Gathers collapsed the first time. He actually collapsed twice. Some people don't know that. So he collapsed the first time. That's what triggered the lawsuits, was that after the first time he got cleared to play again, and then obviously during the West Coast Conference tournament, he collapsed a second time and tragically passed away. So Vince had an episode like that, and I've heard it was very, very serious. You know, I'm only talking really to talk about it because it was actually in this article today. So what do you think about the timing here, Nick? I mean, you have some familiarity with the way the program handles things. Do you think that this was like a situation, because this was Matt Norlander of CBS Sports, who's a very prominent college basketball writer, co-host of the most popular college basketball podcast. I think he's the one who broke the story, right?
Yeah, as Norlander of CBS. I know the program does really keep a lot of this news under wraps. So just any sort of injury news, or especially during the, you know, the whole FBI investigation, that stuff gets kept internal. And these, you know, I think they wanted this out there. If Norlander ran it, like, I guess it was just, you know, they felt it was time to do it. I think Vince gave like direct quotes in that interview. So I'm a little bit surprised they didn't do a press release on it and gave Norlander the scoop. But yeah, I mean, it happened in early July here. So the program obviously did a pretty good job keeping this under wraps from the national media, at least.
Yeah, I mean, under wraps in such a way that's almost some shocking, because when I found out about it, it was so sensitive that, I mean, I was sworn to secrecy. It was not even communicated to me over like text format. It had already been probably a month by the time, you know, from when the incident happened, when I had heard about this. So it was, the program did an excellent job of keeping it very quiet. Letting, you know, Vince do what he needed to do. He's obviously been around the program recently because you see him in all these pictures on Instagram and the videos and stuff that are posted by the team. I agree with you. I think this had to have been intentional. It makes sense, though, because practice is starting. You're going to start getting people going to practices, including, like, national media people like John Rothstein and guys like that are going to show up to practice, and they're going to want to see the number one ranked player in the very prominent recruited class, and they're going to want to know why he's not playing. So I think it makes total sense to come out and just be clean with everybody. Let everyone know what happened. It also, I mean, this is a more selfish reason to do this, but it basically kind of just tells the world that it's not clear if we're going to have Vince as part of the program going forward. I mean, hopefully one day he'll get clear to play, but I don't know if we should expect that at all. And if, you know, if we're looking for personnel to fill roster spots, that's a spot on the roster that may need to be filled at some point. So alerting the world to that, I don't think is the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think overall, like, they did a good job balancing the interests of obviously like Vince and the sensitivity of the situation, with also like announcing it in a reasonable manner, to the point where like we all know it's still the preseason and everybody's aware of the issue. So I give credit to USC. I think they handled it pretty well in this case.
So I guess, you know, I've already been contacted by someone I know who, you know, has a relationship with a cardiologist, and there's sort of like medical speculation. I don't want to get too much into that because we just don't know what the situation is. Obviously these types of things have happened recently, and it happened with the Florida power forward, who we actually kind of, I think we're actually potentially pursuing for as a transfer, Keontae, what's his last name?
Who's this?
Who's the Florida power forward?
Keontae Johnson.
Keontae Johnson. So
he had a similar incident. He collapsed on the court.
Florida never cleared him, as far as I understand. And he has since now, I think he signed with Kansas State. I'm not positive about that.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess K-State was willing to, the doctors that were willing to clear him, or appear that they're willing to clear him. It becomes a really sensitive issue for obvious reasons. I think, you know, the speculation that I've heard from this friend who has a cardiologist friend is it could be a genetic situation, which is often the case with these. In which case it'd be, if it's genetic, it'd be hard maybe to even find somebody to clear him eventually. So he's really very much up in limbo, in a situational limbo right now. We don't know if he will be able to be cleared by anyone to play basketball again. This is a different situation though for him, because he is very clearly an NBA prospect who at some point was going to make money professionally playing basketball somewhere. And if he's not able to do that, that's a big deal in his life. So I am 100% sure that he's going to make every possible effort to get whatever situation his medical condition resolved, if it can be resolved, so he can eventually play.
Yeah, definitely. We certainly wish Vince all the best. It's a really horrific incident. Just speaking like on the USC side of things too, like you look at the history of, you know, USC dealing with very serious injuries. They never cleared Armand Armstead, who then went to the CFL. They never cleared Jarvis Jones, who then transferred to Georgia and went in the first round of the draft. Those are football players, but, you know, it just shows like USC's doctors are often erring on the side of caution in these situations. So, if it turns out Vince transferred to another school and another school cleared him and USC wouldn't clear him, that wouldn't shock me at all. I have no like intel or anything that's saying that's going to be the case, but, you know, just knowing that, you know, USC will always err on the side of caution in these sort of situations.
Yes, that's absolutely the case. Okay, so that news is broken. The other news that has come up in the past couple of days, basketball related, is that Isaiah Collier has been in Los Angeles the past couple days. It sounds like, I guess, he was on USC's campus for a practice on Tuesday. Then he swung by UCLA's campus for practice on Wednesday. This has been a little bit under the radar, I think. UCLA had kind of been ruled out by a lot of fans, but now there's talk from the UCLA fans that
are devoted listeners of this podcast. Thanks for listening. That maybe there's a chance again
for Isaiah Collier, or at least at a very minimum, he can see the dramatic difference in the quality between the pathetic practices that Andy Enfield runs at USC and the world-class practices that Nick Cronin runs at UCLA. So either case, it's a win-win for UCLA here.
That's right. And if he, you know, chooses to go to UCLA now, or I'm sorry, if he chooses to go to USC over UCLA after seeing the just vast difference in the quality of practice, it just means that he's, you know, not a serious player. It doesn't really value playing professionally.
Right. Well, it obviously proves just a few things. One, that he clearly took a payoff. Two, that he doesn't want to compete. And right. And three, he's probably not very intelligent. So
yeah,
between those,
get in academically. To,
right. Right. Exactly. So. So yeah. I mean, look. The way you know if a player is a fit or not for UCLA is whether or not they're willing to commit to play for Mick Cronin.
That's right. That's right. And for anybody that's confused, this is Tracy Pearson over at Bro saying that that the NBA scouts, he says, all biases aside, the NBA scouts that he knows who have watched USC and UCLA say there's no comparison between the two programs' practices, and that basically like anybody would be a fool to go to UCLA to go to USC if they watched both programs practice. So some really like unbiased reporting there over at Bro. But now, I mean, in terms of college recruitment, like Jamie Shaw wrote that article last week, and Collier had a quote in it and basically said that, you know, he's the communication with UCLA, he has a decent relationship with their coaches, but it's dropped off and recent weeks here. So I think he's just, you know, in town, so he figures why not go to UCLA to check out a practice. But by all accounts here, like, he's been at SC and he's probably going to come back with Arrington Page this weekend because Arrington Page is in town. So definitely, you know, still seems to be trending in the right direction here for the Trojans.
I definitely agree with that. So I guess we can, you know, we've talked so much about Paige and Collier, and, you know, and as you said, Paige is going to be in town over the weekend again. So he's going to be in town. USC is playing a football game. So maybe we should talk about a little football.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So let's review just really quickly, go through some last week's stuff. I guess we could talk about the Oregon State game first, which was, you know, gosh, that's one of those games where, you know, you start sweating and get nervous and I'm biting my nails. I will 100% say this. It was, even if we were going to lose, it was such an amazing experience for me to actually care whether or not USC won or lost a football game. It's been so long. I think I could go all the way back really to the Rose Bowl game against Penn State, because after that, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of like the next year with Darnold, when I know we lost at Notre Dame. I was at the game. We just got blown out by Notre Dame. But I can't remember if we lost a game earlier in the season or not. Anyway, it just was so clear that Clay's program was just a total mess. And so clear that what's going on with Lincoln Riley is just, you know, it's just a different situation. I mean, where were your thoughts? I mean, obviously, you know, we have a star quarterback in that game who really hasn't looked good now for maybe 10 consecutive quarters of football. And yet he was able to win us on the game-winning drive, lead us on the game-winning drive. And we were able to pull out a tough game to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally echo your sentiments on, you know, caring about USC football again for the first time in a while. I think the game that I kind of gave up was, it wasn't that Rose Bowl year. It was the year after that when they lost to Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. And I went to that game and it was just so clear that, you know, that they needed a coaching change. And I think that's the exact game where Lynn Swann gave him the extension and just kind of wrecked everything.
I was at that game as well. And it was just a completely like lackluster effort where it just seemed like, you know, even though Ohio State really couldn't get a lot going, it's like, we just had nothing. We're just like dead on the field, you know, just nothing there.
Yeah, no, and we even moved the ball between the 40s. Darnold would throw these like fade passes to Pittman in these tight windows, but the O-line was getting blown up consistently. And, you know, JT Barrett wasn't even that good. Like that was a mediocre Ohio State team. And with this team, yeah, like I think there are a few things. I think even though they had the construction thing going on up there in Corvallis, it seemed like they really struggled with the environment and how loud it was. So just reading Lincoln Riley's comments in the post game, I think they didn't really expect it to be that loud and that good of an environment. So credit to the Oregon State people. The jerks, right, were throwing the stuff at the players, but their fan base brought it and they were ready for that game. With Caleb Williams, I mean, he was kind of the guy that underperformed, right? Like, I think the defense did well. The offensive line was pretty good, especially in run blocking, and the receivers were okay. They didn't drop anything. I think maybe Mario Williams had one drop, but Caleb was just like, he was holding onto the ball too long. I think he's risk averse because he doesn't want to throw any picks, and he hasn't all year, and that's good. But you know, when you're risk averse and you're waiting for the deep play to develop and you don't check the ball down, then you end up holding on the ball for like 8 to 10 seconds back there. And I think that happened a few times. And then he definitely missed a lot of the underneath stuff and was just inaccurate with those passes. So overall, just wasn't a great game for him. I think Lincoln Riley too, like, I don't think he ran quite enough in that game. Like he kind of wants to win with Caleb's arm sometimes. I think they kind of got greedy a little bit with the play calling, kind of like they did against BYU last year when BYU, kept dropping 8 and Graham Harrell kept throwing anyway in that game. So there's some stuff to work on, but I'll say this too, like Caleb's legs also bailed them out of a lot of sacks and even, some key conversions. And I think having a quarterback with mobility is a huge asset. But yeah, like I'm spewing a lot of thoughts here, but I think having Caleb play as poorly as he did and still coming out with a road win is really impressive. And I'm pretty optimistic for the team moving forward, but at the same time, like they're just not quite at the level of like the Georgias and the Bamas and the Ohio States, the world tier.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. So yeah, let me run through a few things because you
have
a whole bunch of great points.
Yeah.
Caleb, okay, so he is out of rhythm with the offense a lot. I think it might be him being risk averse, but he's not getting the ball away out quick enough to receivers a lot of times. I think maybe he's worried about getting picked. So he's holding onto the ball too long. When he holds onto the ball too long, he seems to get more and more inaccurate with his passing. And that, finally at the very end of the game, he seemed to come around again, was throwing accurate passes. But before that, I mean, there were just a lot of passes that were just off by, like, let's say 2 degrees, you could even see like when you try to make a safety valve throw underneath to a running back. The ball might have only been in the air for like 8 yards, but it was like 2 yards off, target. So there was a lot of that. I think I'm wondering if he's overthinking things a little bit. I know a huge criticism was that, we didn't run the ball enough. I think obviously that the issue was running the ball early when it was working, right? We would keep going back to the pass. Now, look, that is Lincoln Riley football. This is very similar to what Nick Norenthal used to do, which he would always throw the ball a lot more in the first half and then try to run in the second half. The problem here was we had a matchup advantage on the run plays, especially when we like on those outside zone plays. We were getting big chunks of yards. And we did go away from that. And I knew that, like there was going to be a point in time when Oregon State adjusted their defense and we were just not going to be able to get these big chunks of yards running unless we were able to get the passing offense again, going again, which didn't happen until the very like last drive. So by the time we started to try to run the ball more, it was like too late and they had already made their adjustment. So we just got to get more in sync with that. But look, it's all going to be based upon Caleb, what Caleb can do here. There was one point in the middle of the game where I tweeted out that, hey, it might be a good idea to like, you know, let Miller Moss take a series, not because I want to replace Caleb as quarterback permanently, but just because sometimes it's just good to come to the sidelines, take a look, see how things are going. And he's been just really,
he just hasn't been on. He hasn't been on.
He has, but luckily now he has got a game coming up where maybe he can, you know, get back into rhythm. The defense. Okay. So this is, I think actually maybe the most important part of the game was not even Caleb's struggles, but what we saw with the defense, because this was the first time all season where our defense actually made stops, not just like, you know, cause turnovers in at timely points in the game. We actually made stops. That was a big deal. We've struggled all season stopping opponents, and we're actually able to get stops against Oregon State. That you could tell there's one series where when Oregon State took the lead, they just were right down the field and scored, and we couldn't do anything about it. But then when they got the ball back, it seemed like we made some adjustments again. The defensive line looked so much better to me. We were actually getting penetration on run plays, which we had not been able to do for most of the season. So, you know, I'm actually like getting a little more optimistic that the defense can come around more. That's going to be absolutely necessary for us to like compete for something like a college football playoff berth or some major bowl, whatever we're shooting for this season. Obviously Gentry had a tremendous game. I mean, he's just a guy he's great. I mean, he's, you know, maybe the top tackler on the team. And he obviously, when it comes to just all around, you know, in pass coverage and just disrupting things, he is a tremendous, tremendous player. And, he, you know, it's just funny because, you know, he's the size of a guy that's not, you don't typically get a dominant linebacker that lean, but he's just played really great. So I said a mouthful there, but I'm more optimistic about how what we saw from the defense really than anything else, including when we scored with like more than a minute to go. I really thought we scored way too early and they're going to drive the ball right down the field and score on us. And the defense really rose to the occasion. So bravo to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of amazing, like, how good the transfers have been, right? Like, you look at the defense, right? Like, Shane Lees, he's kind of been up and down this year, but he had 12 tackles, had a pretty good game. And then Gentry getting his hand on so many balls in the passing game. And it's kind of shocking, right? Because he's built like a small forward. He's like 6'6", probably like 200 pounds. But you know, even despite his slight frame, he's still physical like enough, and he doesn't get pushed around as much as you think he would. He's just awesome. I mean, he's best linebacker. I'd have to like look at the linebackers, but off the top of my head, like obviously he's not as good as like the Brian Cushing, Maluga duo or anything, but certainly like in recent years, it seems like he's the best guy we've had. And then the back four is getting it done, right? The safeties and the corners. I mean, Blackman's really good. I think he's the INT he had was really impressive. He seems like at least an all Pac-12 corner, and they don't really throw it right a lot, but he had that, you know, pick on the overthrow. So the corners looking pretty solid. Max Williams is a ball hawk and pretty good tackler for his size at the other safety spot. So yeah, then I think, you know, putting Solomon Bird in there and getting him starters reps has been really crucial. He had, you know, a couple sacks against Fresno State. He had the hurry on that overthrow that they got the INT on in the second half. So, yeah, I guess kind of building on your point, right? If you were going to win a 3-point game up there, I think, you know, you'd much rather win a 17-14 game than a 45-42 game. Just because it shows, you know, the defense can compete at a higher level, and you know, you kind of trust like Lincoln and Caleb to figure it out, right? So I mean, like, you know, we talked about it, you know, on the last pod. I mean, this is probably the second hardest game on the schedule, right? And they played probably like a B-minus C-plus game here and got through it on the road. So, yeah, again, like outside of that Utah game, it's kind of hard to spot another loss. They definitely could lose if they, you know, play poorly. But, you know, I'm kind of thinking they could go 11-1 here. What do you think, Chase?
Yeah, no, I think they're in a good position. You know, the fact that Arizona lost kind of decisively to Cal tells me, you know, they might, I mean, look, that's going to be a tough game because we're playing on the road, but I don't think they're quite as good as I thought they might be. I mean, look, the two best teams in the North appear to me to be Oregon and Washington, and they're not on our schedule. So it's one of those seasons. Right. Yeah. So I think we're in a good position. All right. Let's run through some of the other games from last week that we talked about. I think we both thought Michigan would win. I think Maryland actually covered on this one. It was only a 7-point game. I was surprised it was as close as it was, but you know, it was a pretty close game to the end. Pretty good game, entertaining game. But Michigan did pull that one out. Clemson and Wake Forest go to overtime. I really thought that Clemson would really win this one, came decisively. This one tells me that Clemson is not quite back. I mean, I know they're 4-0. Maybe they'll get around the hump more. But they're not back to the level of playing, you know, winning a college football playoff championship.
Yep. Agree. Yep.
Let's see what else we have from last week. Kansas, by the way, is 4-0, beat Duke. That's just something to note. They look like a pretty decent team. UCLA wins for fun to Colorado. Colorado, I think, now has the worst opening month for any high major team since like 1957. I mean, just some crazy stats somebody come with. Notre Dame kind of rising to the occasion, wins down in North Carolina. They might, you know, maybe they'll start to pull things together. Okay. Game we did talk about, Florida, Tennessee. I think we both discussed that, you know, Tennessee had not won a big game for such a long time, and they won. It was close, but they won. They're 4-0. I'm still skeptical if they're really high quality, but you know, they're 4-0. You can't take that away from them. But Miami Hurricanes lose to Middle Tennessee State by 2 touchdowns at home. Okay, my upset special from last week was Texas Tech beating Texas. It sure enough happened. It took overtime, but it happened. Minnesota actually could be a pretty good team. They won in East Lansing by 27 points. They're 4-0 now. They might be the best team in the Big Ten West. Okay, Oregon, Washington State. I have to say this game, I mean, I think I was texting you as this game is going on. I know Washington
State. This was unbelievable. The last couple minutes of this game. Yeah.
Okay. And you could see it coming because for the last essentially half of the game, the quarterback for Washington State could not execute their offense. He would only be successful on if the plays were just complete breakdowns and he had to like improvise and do something. If he was actually trying to run the play that was called, it was a failure every single time. He couldn't execute like zone reads. He didn't know when to hand the ball off, when to keep it. In the coaching decisions toward the end, there's just so much to say here. But, Oregon only won by 3. The discrepancy in the quality of play in the last quarter was like they could have won by 35. I think Oregon is pretty good. I still think they're like a 9-3, 10-2 team probably. Washington State, they are not as good as I thought they were. And look, they've already beaten Colorado State and Wisconsin, so it's for them it probably already a successful season. But you know, they traveled to SC. They got games at Oregon State. They have Utah on the schedule, at Stanford, at Arizona. I'm not sure where they finish here. Maybe 7-5 is my guess.
I think they'll be good enough to go to a bowl game. Kind of like your comments on their quarterback. I didn't see most of that game. I just saw the last few minutes when the wheels came off for Washington State. But given like kind of his trajectory, it makes sense. So he's a transfer from Abilene Christian. So probably what happened here is he's like really new to the quarterback. Sorry, not Abilene Christian, Incarnate Word. but you know, obviously he's playing at a lower level and just got away, you know, just based on his talent, right? Smoking the competition and had some good highlight clips. So then, you know, Wazoo went and grabbed him. And I mean, he seems like a talented kid. He threw for 375, but it's just the nuances of the quarterback position are, you know, really new to him, or he's just never played at this level, right? So that kind of showed, it kind of flashed through in that fourth quarter.
Absolutely.
Right. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think he'll be able to come down to the Coliseum and take out SC or anything like that. But, you know, you got to take that game somewhat seriously, and you can't just sleepwalk through it, because they can score points just based off of like his talent if you're not careful there. So, yeah. And then the Clemson thing, they're just not as good on the back end. Their cornerbacks like interfered like every other play. Like I felt like half of Wake Forest yards almost were on pass interference calls, and they were actually like legitimate pass interferences there. That was a really, really weird game to watch, but they had to get bailed out by their offense in that game, which, you know, has kind of been hit or miss with DJ Uiagalelei over the last year or two. So, you know, Clemson, the ACC is weak. That was a ranked Wake Forest team they were playing on the road. So they should be able to, I think, win 9 or 10 games, but I think they'll probably trip up in, you know, either against NC State this week or down the line here, maybe against Florida State or someone like that. But yeah, they seem to be on that track. I agree with you on Oregon. I think they're probably like 9-3 or so level. They really had no business winning that game at Wazoo, but they did. So I tend to think they'll either drop the Civil War against Oregon State, or, you know, Washington could beat them, but I think they have probably a couple more losses in them there. Yeah, outside of that, Washington, they look real. They're only laying 2.5 at UCLA this week, so that's pretty interesting, but seems like the odds makers are daring you to pick Washington with that line.
Absolutely. I guess,
you know, we can dive into these lines here. Like I presume you like Washington like I do here, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, before we jump into that, just cover a couple more games from last week.
Yeah.
I picked A&M to lose at home to Arkansas. They won by 2. Ohio State, I thought would win, beat Wisconsin. They won by 31, so they kind of seem right. And then
the big upset of the week, I guess, was Oklahoma losing at home to Kansas State. So you know, I know a lot of SC fans were happy about that because of some of the behavior of the Oklahoma fan base. I guess we already had a game. We had a couple games tonight. I didn't actually pay attention to, but South Carolina won at home against South Carolina State, and then BYU beat Utah State at home. And then, okay, so tomorrow night, as you said, 2.5-point line, UCLA, Washington. What's your pick on that one? That's basically just a pick'em.
Yeah, so Washington's favored by 2.5 at the Rose Bowl. I'll take Washington to cover on the road, but it feels like a trap line, but, you know.
Yeah, I feel like this is a trap, and I think UCLA might pull this out, but we'll see. Yeah. What's another interesting game here that's worth talking about? Do you want to talk about Oklahoma TCU? I mean, that's not super interesting team. 6.5 points TCU's getting.
Yeah. I kind of think Oklahoma bounces back here on the road and takes care of business.
Michigan is at Iowa. Iowa is 3-1, only lost to Iowa State, which was a close game. Michigan is a 10.5 point favorite. You know, Iowa at home, that's always tough. I think Iowa might cover here.
Yeah, no, I saw a stat that Brett McMurphy tweeted today, and it sounds right because I've watched a lot of these games over the years. Iowa is 6-0 against the spread at home versus AP top 5 teams over the last 6. So
there we go.
They've got that, like, you know, the great home environment, right, with the like hospital where they do the wave at it, right? And you know, you get the homer repping like you do at Notre Dame and in those Midwestern games, right? So I think you probably see some of that there. And McCarthy, actually, the Michigan quarterback, he didn't look great against Maryland's. He missed a lot of throws. So I'm a little lower on Michigan after watching that too. So I'll take the Hawkeyes.
So this is a bit of an interesting game. We have Kentucky, who's 4-0 at Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss team. Jackson Dart. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Jackson Dart playing quarterback. Mississippi, 7-point favorite at home. This is an interesting game. I mean, it's actually a pretty good game. Kentucky has been pretty good the last couple of years. Ole Miss has actually been really tough too. What's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, the 7-point line here. So Vegas basically power ranks Ole Miss is like 3.5 to 4 points better than Kentucky on a neutral, even though they're the lower ranked team. So that's pretty interesting. I actually like Kentucky here. I like Will Levis, their quarterback, is going to be a top 10 pick. And I think their defense is really shown up this year. They won that tough game at Florida, leaning on their defense. And I tend to think they can do a pretty good job against Jackson Dart, who hasn't looked that good this year. So I'll take Kentucky to actually win the game here.
Okay. All right. Is it Oregon State at Utah? This actually should be a pretty good Pac-12 game. It starts at 11 a.m. on Pacific time, 2 p.m. on the East Coast. It's a 10-point line, which makes sense. Utah should definitely be the favorite. Utah should win. I'm just wondering how close Oregon State can get this thing.
Yeah, I'll take Utah to win and cover. One thing I didn't really notice about Oregon State is just how drastic their home road splits were last year. So this is really fun. So Oregon State at home was undefeated. They were 6-0. And then on road or neutral, they were 1-6. So
wow.
Yeah. And the only road neutral game they won was the Coliseum, right? Where they just destroyed us and ran all over us. So that was really something. But given those numbers, right? And I think you watch that environment where we played them last week, and it kind of makes sense, like really good crowd, and they have a good thing going up there in Corvallis. Flip side of that is on the road they struggle. So I'll take Utah to handle business and cover the spread here.
I agree. Okay. A lot of good games just because we're starting conference play in earnest now. So we have Oklahoma State traveling to Baylor, two top 16 teams. Baylor's 3-1, obviously lost to BYU. They might not be as good as thought. The line here is, I just had this pulled up. Line is Baylor -2.5 at home. I like Oklahoma State here to win the game outright.
Yeah, I think they do too. Baylor did get a pretty good win against Iowa State up in Ames last week, which I'm sure is what's driving that line. But Gundy's a good coach. I mean, he's won a lot of these games against, you know, these good defenses, and he's kind of shown to be more than just an offense-only coach. So, yeah, I think they get it done as well.
Okay, so this is one of the really intriguing games of the day. 17.5-point line here. Alabama traveling to Arkansas. I mean, everything you've seen out of Alabama for the last 2 years says this is going to be a close game, but it's a 17.5-point line. I almost think like it's a, you know, they're trying to play with us again to say, oh, Alabama's actually going to cover this thing. And they could even do a backdoor cover the way Alabama works. But man, that's a big line for the way Alabama's played away from home recently.
Yeah, I like Arkansas a lot here. It almost seems like a trap, too. And I don't know if you caught any of that Arkansas A&M game, but, if you were an Arkansas bettor, you're totally furious, right? Because you pushed on the 2. Arkansas had a play late in the second quarter where they were on the A&M 1-yard line. The quarterback was, like, you know, reaching the ball across, fumbled it, and A&M returned it all the way, right? So that one play was – a 14 it was a difference. Point swing it was a four, right there.
14-point swing and a 2-point game. Yeah,
I mean, and a 2-point game,
right? And yeah. No, because that's a game where I picked Arkansas to win. When I saw that, I said, "Oh," because they were really in a position to put the game away at that point if he had gone in. This is a weird line. It is a super weird line, but it's such a weird line that I don't even, it scares me. It just scares me deeply because everything screams, you know, to take the points here. And even if Alabama were to win, it's going to be a close one. Okay. another, okay, so this is another interesting game. Wake Forest, gosh, this is going to be a fun Saturday. Wake Forest at Florida State, seven, Knowles. Has this game been canceled or are they playing? I guess they're playing this, right?
Oh, I think they're still going. Yeah, it's okay. Far north enough here.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So 7-point favorite of Seminoles at home. Gosh, this is an interesting game. I think Florida State pulls this out at home, but I think they're going to get a big crowd. Florida State fans are dying for an important game, and this might be the one where they get into it enough and they just push Florida State through and Florida State covers.
Yeah, and I kind of think there might be like a rally around the state of Florida effect. So I think they'll play really hard in this one and probably win. 6.5 is like high enough of a spread where I have like a little bit of hesitancy with it, just because like Wake Forest is, they're decent and they asserted themselves pretty well last week, but I kind of
and they run that mesh run pass RPO. Oh God! So.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's apparently it's unstoppable now in college football.
Yeah.
After all these years, right? You know, no one could figure it out until this year. but now I think Wake Forest, they, you know, the other way to look at it, I think they put a lot emotionally into that Clemson game at home last week and had kind of the devastating overtime loss, and you know, it kind of seems like, you know, Florida State is just in a better spot coming into this week. So I think they'll win. I think I'll lean on them to cover as well.
So how about this? We have Kentucky and Ole Miss is both teams ranked in the top 14. And then we have the Tigers playing each other, LSU versus Auburn. Neither team is ranked. I don't even know if it's worth talking about. I think LSU wins this game. Auburn is getting 8 points at home. I don't think Auburn's any good this year at all. And I don't even know if this game's worth talking about, but I think LSU wins.
Yeah, Auburn looks atrocious. They got super lucky last week where they were playing Missouri, and I believe they were up like three. Yeah, they were up three in overtime, and Missouri had the ball. So Mizzou basically needed a field goal to tie, touchdown to win, and the Mizzou running back fumbled going into the end zone, and Auburn recovered it. Just should have lost at home to Mizzou, and Mizzou's not good either. This is a bad Missouri team. So Auburn's really bad. I'll take LSU to win. I don't even know what the spread is, but I think
it's Auburn's getting 8 points at home. But yeah, I don't think it matters.
Okay.
Okay. So this might be the weird game of the week with all these good games, but maybe this is it. North Carolina State at Clemson. This is like the best start to a season for North Carolina State in like many, many years. They've beaten Texas Tech by nearly two touchdowns. Haven't played a lot of other good competitions since then. Clemson at home, they're 6.5-point favorite. You know, you think Clemson's going to win this, but this is the week where North Carolina State just pulls it off and beats Clemson.
Yeah, it'd be a lot more intriguing if the game was at NC State, I think. NC State, they haven't looked that good. Like that first week against East Carolina, they should have lost that game. The Tech thing, that was, you know, that was solid. I think their defense is pretty real, and they can kind of keep it as a low-scoring game, and they have a decent quarterback, so I wouldn't be shocked if they hung around here, but I think Clemson kind of ultimately prevails late at home.
Okay, so we got Stanford at Oregon. I wouldn't even bring it up, except for Stanford tends to play Oregon pretty tough usually. The 17-point favorite at home for Oregon. If I had to bet this game, I would actually take the points here.
I would take the points as well.
Emmitt Smith's son is, by the way, is out for the season, so he won't be playing for Stanford's EJ Smith.
Right, right. The backup is decent, though. They had this Casey Filkins kid, and he ran for 100 last week's averaging close to 5 yards a carry. And that's a loss, but not like insurmountable. But Stanford has larger issues as a program. I mean, is it time we start talking about, you know, David Shaw's job here? It's been a, you know, really atrocious last few seasons for these guys.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not like you can make up for it with exciting football, right? I mean, the only thing worse than bad football is boring football, and man, they are boring. Okay. That brings us to the USC game. I'm not sure how interesting this is of a pick. I think the line opened at 20. It's now up to 25.5, which I think is much more appropriate. Arizona State here, here's their record. So far this season, they've lost to Utah by 21, lost to Eastern Michigan at home by 9, lost to Oklahoma State by 17 on the road. So that was kept somewhat somewhat close. And then they won their opener against Northern Arizona, who I'm not sure. Are they actually an FBS score or are they an FCS? I think they're FCS score, right?
I think so, yeah. They're in the so, Big Sky. I think that's FCS.
Yeah, I think it's FCS. I am not particularly impressed with, you know, the Big Sky might be FBS now. I don't know. They're playing teams like Weber State. They also play Davis, which I think is a, I don't know. I can't figure this out. Yeah, who cares? Arizona State's not going to win this game. I mean, this is one of the, you know, at this point in USC season, and we're at this the point we are in a program right now, this is the kind of game SC is going to take care of business. I'm completely confident in that. You could get some freak injuries somewhere through, but Arizona State's just kind of collapsing right now as the season, and SC is going to think we're going to really come out fired up a little bit coming off that win. I don't think they're going to have a letdown. I think they're going to play hard. That's just my read of it. I think, you know, I feel pretty confident SC is actually going to cover here.
I agree. My biggest concern with it is just like if they're up, you know, 30 or so like late and they pull Caleb Williams and then, you know, Moss just, they just run the ball and punt and then ASU gets some token touchdown late. But I don't see it being close in any way, shape or form. I mean, you know, this ASU team, they lost Eastern Michigan at home. Utah smoked them. Oklahoma State smoked them. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that ASU Colorado game in Boulder. That's going to be something.
Yeah,
gonna get a 1-6 ASU and an 0-7 Colorado, or something like that.
Arizona State has only gone over 360 yards in a game once this season. Their offense has really struggled. I think if you're going to beat SC, you do need to bring the offense.
Yeah, I agree. I think ASU might be worse than Rice, actually. I think it's pretty close. You know, Rice has actually performed fairly well since that.
I know Houston's not great, but they only lost to Houston on the road by 7. They beat Lafayette. Yeah, I mean, yep. I think Rice is decent enough. And yeah, that would be an interesting game, Rice versus Arizona State.
Yeah, I think so. That Houston team, they started out the season ranked too and only beat Rice by a touchdown. So, I was looking at the Rice thing and they covered the spread by like over 30 in week 2, over 20 in week 3, and by like 10 in week 4. So they keep beating Vegas. So they're actually halfway decent. ASU, yeah, I don't think there's too much to say. Like, should be a blowout. If it's not a blowout, I'll be really concerned. But, I think probably SC by, maybe 30 to 40 here.
Yeah, and by the way, we should mention that Houston, who, you know, has, you know, open season ranked and then has dropped 2 games. But the 2 teams they lost to were an overtime loss to Texas Tech on the road. And then that bad loss was losing to Kansas, but Kansas is 4-0 now. So I think they probably just knocked them into that game prepared, thinking that they're going to be playing like a really good team. And Kansas is actually pretty good. So, so maybe Houston will round back to form, finishing 4-9-3, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, those are the games. You got anything else before we adjourn for the week?
Just one thing, Chase, like where are you at? Like big picture with USC this year, are you more optimistic after the, you know, close game in Corvallis? Or are you like, oh, the offense is just, you know, too bad and, or not as good as we thought and they really can't compete this year?
No, I'm actually higher because of the defense, because this was finally we saw a defense that was actually performing on the field. I actually think, at some point, you know, Caleb Williams is going to get his act together a little more. I think he's, some of it is just timing. He's got to get his timing down with his offense. I think those are struggles you can work through. But yeah, I actually think that, that this, look, I knew that was going to be a tough game. I know there's some people saying, you know, we're going to blow out Oregon State. We never play well in Oregon. I mean, those, we, even when we win, it's, those are tough games. Those are really tough games. And like the only exception, I think one year we went up there and like Buck Allen ran like for like maybe 250 yards or something. But those are tough games for us whenever we play in the state of Oregon. And I knew that was going to be a tough one. And that's, you know, this is probably the best Oregon State team we've seen since like, you know, since during the Mike Riley period. So I'm the fact that we were able to come out of September 4-0, winning two conference road games and playing, I really think, two pretty decent teams in Fresno State and Oregon State. I think it's this has exceeded what I was expecting. I think this team looks, you know, this is looking, starting to look legit, and you can start to see, I know Rich SC, who is a buddy of mine, who I just respect tremendously. And he's like the, you know, I know I've posted this, but like, if you're ever going to follow anyone like Football Post, he, I mean, and I was a coach myself, so I, reading his analysis is just, he's just so spot on. And he started to talk about, just look at the difference between the way this team performs compared to how they performed in past seasons. And you, it just shows so much. So yeah, I mean, I'm more, much more bullish. That's where I am. What about yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm about the same. I haven't really moved too much after Oregon State. Maybe I started off at like a little bit of a higher point than you. I do think the turnover thing is unsustainable. Like, I know people are, this has been like a big debate, right, on message boards, is like, oh, is the turnover thing sustainable? Like, all the data out there says it's not. Now, I do think there are certain reasons to expect USC to have a positive turnover margin moving forward. You know, one reason is Eric Gentry's really long and gets his hands on a lot of passes, and that's probably worth a couple picks a year. And another reason is Caleb Williams does a really good job taking care of the ball. And the running backs have two for the most part. I know Dye did fumble one at the goal line that they recovered, but you know, I do think there are reasons to expect that, but you're not going to get the plus four turnovers regularly in, you know, weeks moving forward. So you need to have more from the offense to compensate for that. But I do think it needs to be said, right? Like, getting through this game was big. So even if your long-term outlook didn't, you know, change on the quality of this team, like, you check that box, right? And you only have 12 of these games and you got through one. So you absolutely need to account for that as well. But yeah, I think this, the schedule sets up really well. And I know I've said that several times, but the Utah thing, I think that's, it's kind of the one that everybody's looking at, right? It seems like Vegas's power ranking based on these spreads, Utah and USC is about the same quality right now. So, you know, assuming USC and Utah like play kind of as expected over the next few weeks here, I think we'll probably be getting like maybe 2.5 in Salt Lake City. It's kind of my initial guess here, and that'll be really interesting, and their fans are going to absolutely bring it. So concerned about that one for sure. But hey, then again, you could be the Miami Hurricanes where your fans are booing you. You're like 10,000 fans that are there and you're losing to Middle Tennessee State, right? So just it's good to, you know, kind of be back, and also good to not be Miami. So
yeah, no, I agree. That's 100% true. One just little comment, I will say that I know, so this past game, you know, we were really struggling to force punts the first two games. Oregon State punted three times. Now, they did have four turnovers, but one of the turnovers was basically like a punt. It was like a 55-yard pass in the air. And then the other turnover was in that last series. It was on a 3rd and 10. So if that ball had, you know, just fallen to the ground, then, you know, they would have had to convert on a 4th down. So, which they only had one, I think the entire game, they only had one 4th down attempt, which is interesting. I was kind of surprised about that. But yeah, so, you know, they scored two touchdowns, including after, you know, this, that interception and then the bad punt we had. And then three punts. So, you know, all in all, it's not a bad ratio. And I think, you know, obviously the turnovers are making a big impact, but we're actually forcing teams to punt now, which is what we weren't doing earlier that season.
Yeah. Right. Now that's a great point. I mean, yeah. They, and the run D was like legitimately better, right? Like they, Oregon State likes to, they're kind of a more traditional team in the way they attack you. And that Fenwick guy, I think, had like 11 carries for 29 yards or something. So they did a really good job shutting him down.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the different, let's see, the power rankings. Let's see, they have their, so they have title laws and they have power rankings. Apparently, we're in the top six for the title rankings, at least from Vegas odds. And after that, it really, really drops off. So that's an interesting, I mean, obviously we're to lose any of these games, and that would make a big difference. I don't know about the look at the, I want to study these, not the title rankings, but the power rankings for the next episode and comment on those. Okay. Well, really appreciate it, Nick. And until then, I guess, fight on, everybody.
Yeah, fight on.